Broadcasting live from the Business Radio X studios in Atlanta, Georgia, it's time for High Velocity Radio.
Lee Cantor here, another episode of High Velocity Radio, and these are my favorite episodes. These are the Thought Leader Radio episodes where we interview the best and the brightest doing the most interesting things. And today, all the way from Argentina, I got John B. Stevens with Unity Copywriting. Welcome, John.
Thank you, Lee.
How are things in Argentina? What time is it?
It is 11 o'clock.
Oh, so it's almost the same.
So we're only an hour behind you in the summertime. In the wintertime, we're 2 hours behind you. We don't change time here.
So now, tell us about Unity Copywriting. How are you serving folks?
Well, we do. My main business is writing material for business coaches and other advisors to stay top of mind with their prospects and clients. One of the ways that I implement all that is through Smart Money Network's Business Accelerator Program, which is a LinkedIn search device that goes out into LinkedIn's 500 million plus members and searches for people who match a profile that our client gives us. And once we have found people who match that link, then we invite them to connect and begin to develop a relationship with them through drip messages.
And then some of those people eventually do business with your clients?
Some of those, yes, that's right.
And so the way you go about getting clients is probably the same way you tell your clients to get clients, right? It's you're doing what you recommend they do.
Yes, I use the Business Accelerator Program myself, and it's been very successful at generating business opportunities for me.
So now, tell me a little bit about your background. How'd you get into this line of work?
Well, I noticed back in probably 30 years ago, or maybe a little more, that in most organizations there is a huge amount of time and money and energy wasted by people working at cross purposes. And I kind of made it my mission to eliminate as much of that waste as I could. So I've been all about teamwork. One of the analogies I like to use is consider a team of people as being similar to a team of horses. If you have a team of four horses pulling a wagon or a plow or whatever, if one of the horses is pulling and another one is nipping at the other's neck and another one's hanging back, they don't get much done. But if the four horses all pull in unison, they can pull a tremendous load. And teams of people are the same way. If they all pull together, it works. They can accomplish far more than the sum of what each of the individuals could accomplish. But if they work against each other, they just negate their efforts.
Now, do you find it's easier to create those teams that work well together when a lot of times your teammate might be on the other side of the planet?
In the teams that I've actually worked in when I was in industry, in some cases I was not in the same location with them, but I generally had very close communications with them by telephone and sometimes by physical meetings. If people are on the opposite sides of the planet, and especially if they're in different cultures, then that adds a whole bunch of different facets to the whole process. Actually, when I discovered this purpose, I was working in Indonesia as an operations manager for a large independent oil and gas producer. And we had a lot of the cross-cultural differences. We had many Indonesians working with us, and we had quite a few Americans and Canadians and Western people from Western cultures. So we had some of that, and my first big challenge in that, and the challenge and the result was what really cemented this purpose in life for me, was the drilling manager was a very hard-bitten, gruff Texan, tough talking, no fluff. The production manager was a bright young Indonesian. And they were obviously very different culturally. And when I very quickly realized that their departments were not cooperating well, that they were working at cross purposes, as I talked about a minute ago.
Right.
And so I invited those two guys into my office one afternoon shortly after I got this sorted out in my mind and said, look, the only thing that we do here that matters in the world, in the business world, is to put gas in the pipeline. And you guys and your departments both contribute hugely to that. We couldn't do it without you. But it's very important that you work together and that you cooperate with each other. And we're going to make that happen. And so over the next months and weeks and months, I began to work with those individuals and several key people in their departments and helping them understand each other's issues, helping them see better ways to communicate, helping them see better ways to cooperate. And I woke up one morning, some months into this, probably 3 or 4 months later, and I saw that things were starting to come around. And I said, wow, this is what I'm here. This is what I was put on the earth to do. I just love this. And I love making this result happen. So that's when I really discovered this purpose. I think I'd been doing this kind of work for longer than I realized, but that was my real epiphany to understand what I was about.
And then do you think that it was when you brought it to their attention that there was kind of a bigger why to what they were doing, that it was not just about them individually, that they were serving a larger purpose that kind of helped bring them together?
That afternoon when I first met with them, I think they both walked out skeptically and, you know, with skeptical feelings and not so sure about this, about letting go of their individual empires and detailed concerns. But I think over time, yes, I think that's exactly what happened. I think they realized that the detail issues that they had to deal with in their daily work were less important than the mission of the organization, which was to get gas to the LNG plant.
Now, in your work today, in your coaching work today, which is, it sounds like it might be in some ways similar, but in other ways, it's a lot different in terms of this is your own business. Now, you're not part of a mega organization with a ton of resources. It's kind of an eat what you kill world, right, for you at Unity?
Yes, but of course, my mission as a writer is to help coaches who do the kind of work that I have done in those situations to help them make connections with their prospects and clients so that they can accomplish whatever. Some of them, of course, are focused on teamwork. Some are focused on sales. Some are focused on other things. But as a writer and as a searcher for clients for them, my work is to support what they do. I'm not directly coaching myself anymore much.
Right. So you're part of.
I do some of that informally. I think once you're a coach, you're always a coach. But
now, walk me through the process. So now you're going on LinkedIn, and then you're targeting a certain specific group or profile, and those people are connecting with you. And then at some point, you guys decide to at least explore doing business. Walk me through what the beginnings of that look like.
Okay. When a new client signs on with Smart Money Network, with which I'm affiliated, the first thing we do is to take a look at their LinkedIn profile page, their LinkedIn profile summary. And in most cases, people are not really they may be touting their education or their experience or other things, but they mostly are meant very many times they are not really putting anything in that summary that attracts the people they want to attract. It doesn't tell them what the coach can do for them.
Mm-hmm.
And so the first thing we do is to make that profile page as attractive as we can to potential clients for the coach or the person that we're supporting.
Once you kind of get a handle on, okay, this is who you are, at some point you got to kind of dig in and go, okay, who are your ideal customers or who are the people you want to work with?
Yes, that's right. And actually, before we even do that profile rewrite, we have the new client fill out a very detailed questionnaire. It's about 50 questions about who they want to work with, down to geographical area, down to age, how long they've been in their company, how big a company they're in. You know, we really try to drill down to a very detailed profile for their ideal client, their ideal prospect.
Now, when you're having this kind of type of conversation with these people, is this sometimes the first time they've really thought about their customers in this manner? Are you finding that?
Well, it varies from one to another. Some people may have had a fair bit of success in their business, and if that's the case, then they're obviously doing something right to attract their clients. But they may still want more exposure. Other times, it's new people or people who have gotten started in the business or tried to get started in the business but haven't attracted very many prospects. So there's quite a spectrum there of how those things work. But some people, obviously, some people have a better sense of how to attract their ideal prospect than others.
Right.
And so they may have done better work than those who don't have that sense in attracting their clients.
So now, when you got their LinkedIn profile looks good, you got kind of a clear picture of who their prospects look like, and then you turn on this machine that helps those prospects kind of connect with them via LinkedIn, right?
That's correct.
And then
we send out about 100 LinkedIn connection invitations a day. And typically 15 to 30% of those invitations will result in a connection. And once the prospect has connected, then we begin a series of messages that invite them to the network and begin to help them understand who we are as the service provider and develop a relationship with the prospect.
And then are you doing all that, or would that be a full service way of dealing with it? Is you handle everything, or is it the client is the one that's doing kind of the sending out all the emails, sending out the connections, the drip?
Well, the emails go out automatically. They're actually LinkedIn messages go out automatically. Until we get some kind of a response from the prospect. Once we get a response from the prospect, then it's up to the provider, our client, to take over the communication with their prospect and continue building that relationship. Because once somebody has responded to one of the automated messages, then obviously there needs to be human intervention to respond properly to that.
Right, and take it to the next level. Do you recommend that, like, once the person connects, do you try to get them out of the LinkedIn ecosystem and move them to email, or do you stay within the LinkedIn ecosystem?
We We also offer a subscription to VCITA, V-C-I-T-A, which is a customer relationship manager that keeps track of messages. You can make notes in it. You can keep track of all of the client's contact information. And it also includes billing and calendar and all the other aspects of the relationship with a, once a client, once a prospect develops into a client, then this is a very useful tool for managing the relationship with that client. So we, so if people want to move the conversation from LinkedIn over to that customer customer relationship manager or another one, or if they just want to do it through regular email, they can do that. But it's and some people choose to continue on LinkedIn. But LinkedIn is very useful in many ways. But there are some things it doesn't do in the way of keeping track of everything in the relationship.
And so once it gets to the VCITA, then you can send regularly scheduled emails, like kind of drip them information.
You can do that. Although my experience is that once I have a relationship to the point where I want it over to VCITA, then I have some stock messages that I can use and then modify to match whatever's going on with that client or prospect. But I don't like to just have automated messages go to them, because at that point, they are no longer just a prospect. They are Joe Smith, who asked certain questions.
Right.
And so it really needs to be, each message needs to be
handled individually,
crafted to match whatever's going on with that person.
Now, what's been your kind of personal best in terms of helping a client? What kind of results have you gotten with this system?
We have probably my own case is a good example. I signed on to this service in November last year, and so that's what 10 months or something like that. I now have about 4,000 new connections on LinkedIn, and I have very active conversations going on with a number of those people. I've actually taken on as clients I've only succeeded in taking on two clients, but I have many other communications with other prospects that I expect to develop into business.
But I would guess the beauty of this system is that it's kind of a machine, right? That you're not, like, every day you have certain tasks that you do, and it just organically leads to the next thing to do. You're not recreating the wheel every time.
No, that's right. Of course, it's some people, as soon as they connect, send a message. So right away they're in manual communication. Other people don't respond at all for two or three or four messages, or sometimes never. And of course, after a certain period of time, you kind of decide that they probably aren't likely prospects, but it requires constant attention to the communication on LinkedIn, because there's stuff going on every day with, in my case, probably, I suppose I have active communications. I haven't counted them up. I have about 5,000 connections on LinkedIn total, mm-hmm. but I probably am communicating regularly with somewhere near 1,000 of those people.
Wow, that's great. Now, mm-hmm. what brought you to Argentina? Why did you choose to relocate there?
Well, that's kind of an interesting story. Back in the early 90s, I went to an investment conference where I met a man by the name of Doug Casey, who has been investor in unusual investments, and including real estate all over the world. And he was at that time writing a newsletter. He still writes a newsletter, but he was at that time pretty much working by himself and writing a newsletter as he traveled around and investigated various opportunities to invest. And he decided after all his years of travel that Argentina was the best place in the world to live for a variety of reasons. Mm-hmm. And he got a group of investors together and bought a 1,200-acre property in northwest Argentina and began to develop a high-quality resort area, high-quality resort development.
Right.
And I learned about that from reading his newsletter in the late 2000s. And in 2010, I came down to take a look and liked what I saw and bought a lot. And then I came back and visited from time to time as the property was developed and people began to spend more time here and so on. And in 2016, after visiting probably 10 or 15 times, I decided that I liked it enough here to pull the plug in the United States and come down here. I've not given up my citizenship in the United States, but I live here and go back and visit from time to time, but this is my home.
Now, for people who are
gorgeous area.
For people that are considering relocating out of the country, do you have any suggestions for them?
Well, one of the things that I would definitely suggest, and this probably would even include a move to a major new area even within the United States, is that you go spend enough time there to find out what it's like, what the weather's like, what the other opportunities are that are important to you, socially or business-wise or shopping, restaurants, all those kinds of things that affect quality of life. And I would definitely say that anybody who is considering a major change in their living environment, go spend some time investigating what it's like to be in the place they're considering. Because that's, and of course, when it's international, you have the issues with currency exchanges, and you have the issues with different banking systems and different languages and all that kind of thing. And so there are a lot of issues. One of the things that I did when I was considering this decision to move here was to make a little Excel spreadsheet where I listed all the parameters down the left side. I listed all the parameters that are important to me.
Right.
And then I made two columns and I ranked my home in New Hampshire versus my prospective home in Argentina on a scale of 1 to 10 in each of those parameters, and then added up the difference. In my case, it came out when I decided to move here, it came out to be, I don't remember the exact number, but it was like 72 to 108, I think, in favor of Argentina.
Wow. So it was pretty significant.
Yeah.
Do you regret it or you're happy there? What's life like there? For it's been a while now. You're acclimated.
I am acclimated. I've been here for 2 years. And actually, for the 2 years before I moved, I was here for 6 months each of those years. So I was gaining a good bit of experience. But I love it here. The weather is near perfect. We have a lovely golf course here, which is important to me. We have wonderful people. The local people love us, and we love them. And I have many friends among them. And we have quite a few international people, United States, Canada, Europe, people here as well. So the opportunities for social activity and other things are quite varied. And now there are some things that are missing. Shopping opportunities are not. Well, you don't have a Costco around the corner. the dining experience is somewhat limited here. The the food that the local people typically eat is pretty bland and pretty much the same. If you go to the average restaurants in town, there are some high-end places that have some more variety. But if you go to the average restaurants in town, the menu, you could almost take one menu and put different names on it, and it would fit right. Everybody's fare.
And then, but overall, you're pretty satisfied?
Oh, I love it. I love it. I love the people here, and I love the other thing that I love about life here is that nobody's looking over my shoulder. For people who are old enough to remember it, I tell them it's like life was in the 50s in the United States. it's very, very unintruded upon.
Right. Live and let live, huh?
Exactly.
And if there's a coach out there that wants to learn more about your work at Unity Copywriting, what's the best way to get a hold of you?
The best way is through my LinkedIn profile is a good way to find me, and my website, which is unitycopywriting.com.
Okay.
And those two resources will either give you any information you need or give you links to other places where you can find it. Most of it's there.
And then on LinkedIn, your name's kind of common. So is it spelled or is it written differently to find you on LinkedIn? John Stevens.
It's John Stevens. Actually, Unity, the link on to my profile has Unity in it. I don't remember exactly.
Yeah, I got it here. It's John Stevens Unity. If you type in John Stevens Unity on LinkedIn, your name should pop up. And it's John B. Stevens if they're having some questions of which
yes.
John Stevens you are. Well, John, thank you so much for sharing your story today. That's John B. Stevens at Unity Copywriting, serving the coaching community. It's been a pleasure. I'm sure we'll talk again.
Very good. The pleasure's been mine.
All Thank right. You. This is Lee Cantor for Business Radio X and Thought Leader Radio. We will see you next time.